From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Good morning and welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Today we're going to be talking with Professor Atif Kaborsi, Professor Emeritus at McMaster University. He's been very much involved in United Nations work. And there is an ongoing and really ugly kind of crisis in interethnic, I guess would be one expression, but in Syria, and it's taking the world a little while to wake up to how dangerous the situation is. Later in the show, by the way, we will be talking to representatives of QP Local 1281, because there is a possible strike of full-time staff at the University of Toronto Student Union, and we're going to learn about that. And I want everybody to know that the Israeli conscientious objectors are going to be visiting Toronto on March the 12th, and that will be at the Steelworkers Hall on Cecil Street. You can look that up. They're going to be speaking also in Hamilton on Saturday the 15th of March at 7 p.m. at Westdale United Church. That's 99 North Opal. At this moment, with Gaza under new dangerous stress, with involving the cutting off of electricity, which is the latest news from Gaza, to be talking to two Israeli soldiers who refuse to serve, and this exercise is really important. So I hope people will be attending these events. I believe we have Professor Atif Kaborsi, Kaborsi on the line. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
It's so good to be talking to you, although it's an ugly subject. I'm sure this must be poignant for you. You're from the region. You're from Lebanon, I believe. And, of course, you've traveled throughout, and you know the problems faced by each of the states in the region. We've had this dramatic seizure of power by people who are declared Islamists, who are associated, I'll ask you to explain, but they are, they've been, there was no dispute, the United Nations declared the organization that is now governing Syria as terrorists, although everybody now is changing hats, and the Globe and Mail says that it is the government of Syria fighting Assad loyalists. I'm prejudicing my question, but isn't that that headline has to be wildly misleading, doesn't it?
In any sense, because at this time, and what's unfortunate is that these Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which was declared as a terrorist organization, and its head, Ahmed al-Julani, who was considered to be a terrorist, as he was involved with the ISIS, Qaeda, are now in government. The issue here is that the world is completely confused, and rightly so, that how on earth people who just yesterday were considered to be terrorists and have committed incredible crimes are now considered to be the legitimate government of Syria. As you can easily see on the ground, and as we talked before, there are lots of people and parties who do not buy into this, that you cannot overnight change from being a very fanatically religious group that committed incredible crimes to become the one entrusted with a democratic transformation. The question is, and yesterday the events are raising a very serious question. I mean, 1,300 people have been massacred. Hmm. You know, several massacres here, there, and everywhere. Now, it, you might say that, yeah, the a group that carried on started by killing some of these representatives of the regime. But people do not seem to understand that these people have been implicated in massacring people, killing civilians, literally assassinating doctors and scientists, professors, teachers. So to a great extent, the situation is too ugly. And they keep promising, and I mean the provisional government now, you know, the de facto government, that they're going to make a transformation, an inclusive one. There is no indication that beyond that they have carried a lot of television and big conference of the parties to discuss the reconciliation. But on the ground, there is no reconciliation. The people in the what they call the coast, the Sahel, whether it's Tartous or is it Banias or is it Latiqiyah or even if it's inside Homs, people are quite angst, quite unhappy. They don't find that the rhetoric that they have been enunciating, that much of the world has accepted, is one that is translated into the proper behavior and steps on the ground. The Alawites, the people, a few Christian families, even the Observatory of Human Rights in Syria has issued a number of warnings that some of these elements, and they always say they are elements that are not disciplined or undisciplined elements.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, the rhetoric of these people, the very fact that have created a government in Syria, that is a government of Idlib, that they have only brought their own people and all of their own people who have been implicated in incredible crimes and in incredible trespass of the basic human rights of people.
We're speaking to Professor Atif Kubursi, and we started off with the question of, well, who were these people? And, you know, we watched this strange chameleon conduct of the leader. He puts on a suit. He used to be dressed differently. He was, as I understand it, he actually presided over the execution of women who had done something improper according to the his interpretation of Islamic law. And then all of a sudden they treated him like he was a liberal and he had a suit and he began to say things that I guess were scripted, indicating there was going to be an openness and all that. Now, the Globe says, uses headline sentences like, well, it's a government dominated by this his organization. But isn't it a government of his organization? Or if it's a government...
The trouble is that it's not only his organization, because the organization is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, but there are so many groups that have come under their wing, and they are looting, they are raping, they are massacring people, they are assassinating people, they're stealing people. So the issue here is that you're replacing a regime that had created havoc and probably did not abide by the proper behavior. But these people are not doing any better. They're basically and fundamentally moving from one bad situation into another bad situation, if not worse. Yes. And the question here is to what extent the rhetoric that these people have been enunciating has been translated in any practical and real steps towards reconciliation, inclusiveness, and democratic transition. The government that is now ruling in Damascus is only one suit, one color. and has not really brought in. It's the government of a renegade group in Idlib, northwest of Syria, and now is governing Damascus and other areas. As you can see, and when we talked about it before, there are so many disgruntled groups, and there is no way you're going to bring these groups, and no matter what rhetoric and no matter how beautiful your words, it has to be translated into observable, realistic, and accurate steps and positions, and one of which would be to hasten the development of a constitution that will govern the relationship among all the groups. It's not words, it's not declarations, it's actions on the ground, it's also a legal transformation, and that you bring in the institutions of inclusivity. Everything we see on the ground, all the ministers, all the government groups, they're one color, one suit, one group, and they are a vile group by all meaning. Look at their history. They have been nothing but massacres and destruction and assassination of opposition. We need really, truly a transformation, a very quick one, a very observable one towards inclusion and democracy. And at this time, all we have are literally statements and rhetoric, but no real action.
Mm-hmm. Now, these these groups, or this group, has influence from, and everyone is asking, like, who's who is their uncle? And Turkey has begun to move around in the region in a way that they have not for a long, long time. Israel has already taken, they say, southern Lebanon, and southern Syria, and they intend to hold it. And they have, now they're pretending that they're going to protect the Druze. I don't know if the Druze asked to be protected.
No.
And it's, so who, what external power is, has the influence? You used to talk about Qatar has influence, Saudi Arabia has influence. But Turkey and Israel seem to be, it looks like maybe a quiet decision between them to divide the country.
Well, it seems so. I mean, they don't have to declare it as a decision. De facto, on the ground, in the south, Israel is moving north and keep expanding. It took many of the positions held by the Syrian army. They have moved beyond the armistice agreement line. They are even threatening. They're just maybe walking distance from Damascus. They keep expanding. And the Turks, for all practical purposes, are ruling, and they are in, physically present with some battalion called the Shah Suleiman, is in action in Syria, totally against any international law or international agreement. The issues are very ugly. I mean, the government in Syria keep talking that we are for the integrity of our people and we do not accept what the Israelis have done. Nothing. Mm. You know, they're killing their own people. They bring fantastic number of, soldiers and guns in massacring their own compatriots. But have they done, have they stood, have they fired one bullet on the Israelis or on the encroachment by the Turks on their own people, you know, the Kurds in Syria? No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the characterization that what is taking place on the coast, that this was the mainstream media is trying to turn any resistance to this new group, which is, as you describe it, is not an organized but an extremely dangerous group of extremists. But the media has decided to call anybody who fights this government or resist their coming into their communities, like the Kurds or the Alawi, as Assad loyalists. This isn't helping to give us a clear picture, is it?
No, it's not an accurate description. I mean, most of the people that are really you know, taking to arms. They feel like they have been excluded. They feel that they these renegade groups, which probably are not renegades, are on a rampage. They're assassinating people. They are going into homes, killing families, looting and stealing and assassinating people. People are reacting to the infractions, to the trespass of all laws and all decency in these areas. You want to really have meaningful inclusion, then these people would be the first people you want to protect. These are minorities.
Yes.
And, you know, and they're not only Alawites. You're talking about Alawites. You're talking about Christians. You're talking about Kurds. You're talking about Ismailis. You're talking about a large number of people who do not accept this de facto government as being representative. It's one that usurped illegally the power.
Yes. This resembles very much, at least in the impression, of the way that the Western powers treated Libya, the way they treated Iraq. They seem to think that, that chaos isn't such a bad thing from their point of view.
They, no, no.
They've eliminated a true state with a true army, with true weaponry, and international alliances, and created chaos. They seem to, this is like almost deliberate, isn't it?
Hey, absolutely, and we talked about it. There are two models here that we are moving towards. There's the Libyan model, where you really create a, an armed conflict, and you stand with one, and you're happy watching it implode and explode. Or the Sudanese model. I mean, what we really have here is a true and fundamental level of violence associated with a civil war. And this is minorities trying to protect themselves and their families and their property and being encroached upon by not Syrian, probably. I mean, these renegade group include Afghanis, Chechens. They include all sorts of different powers and different soldiers and different groups, and they've been incorporated in the army when the Syrian people are excluded. I mean, look, how far can you push people? How many crimes would you have to commit? How many trespasses you have to engage in before you get some reaction? What we are really seeing here, and I'm not so sure at all that these are all Assad loyalists, you know, or, you know, Alawite. There is, you know, like...
By the way, they're being attacked just for being Alawite. Right? Our media talks about it as though, well, you deserved this because you supported the previous government. There's that kind of background of, oh, this is just a little revenge. Why would the world permit revenge? What kind of philosophy is that?
Because you see, what people are missing is the broader picture. The Europeans and the Americans, but I don't know about the Americans, because with Trump you don't have a clue where he is. But the people seeing that at that time, Syria had granted Russia a naval base and an air base. And these people are happy to see, and you know that all the trouble now is happening in the vicinity, the neighborhood of the naval base in Tartus or the air base in Hamayim. This is really literally the chess game of the Europeans versus Russians. And to a great extent, the concerns, the sanctity of life, of property, of the Syrian people is a minor detail. What counts here is that we're creating enough trouble and we're aiding this group. We don't like it. It's never been one that was totally acceptable. But it's better than having the Russians there. And as long as we can create problems for the Russians, to hell with the Syrian people. Because, you know, I mean, this is not just theoretical, or I'm imagining things. Thousands upon thousands of families in that area have escaped and penetrated these bases seeking protection.
And they finally achieved also something that Hillary Clinton used to talk about. First, they said, you recall, in 2011, she wanted to have a no-fly zone over Syria. Now it's an Israeli fly zone. The Israelis periodically just bomb somebody, and nobody even knows why they're bombing in Syria. But the airspace is completely gone.
Yeah. Oh, Lebanon too, and Syria. I mean, that's it. This is really the Wild West. It's now the Wild East, you know, and the Israelis are flexing their muscle, killing, assassinating, destroying, rampaging every place. You know, like now going in the ugliest possible way of doing it, cutting electricity, cutting any aid, any food, any holy month of Ramadan when people are fasting and they want to have peace and be able to practice freely their religion. They're being massacred. They're being, you know, humiliated. They're being starved. They're being thrown into darkness. Come on. I mean, the world has to wake up. They're creating a very vicious situation. And I would not be surprised if there will not be blowback as the world really continuously neglects and turns its back on these crimes that they're going to create a lawless world.
Yeah. It's really remarkable and dangerous. I noticed that the Chinese government, there are at the Security Council, of course, there's this question about what about the sanctions because the people suffered. They didn't mind sanctioning when they suffered because Assad was in power. But now the West is talking about, well, we should lift them while a terrorist is running the country. But China says, no, you can't have that person there. Anyone affiliated with that group can't be there, and we can't lift the sanctions on him. By the way, they're not talking about food. They're talking about these individuals in that group, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, we had the golden opportunity to recreate a more stable, more peaceful, more inclusive, and more liberated and free people in Syria. But that's not what's happening. We're really getting a more chaotic, a more, illegal and uncivilized way of attacking people in their homes. I mean, I've seen pictures that's so repulsive, you know, of whole families being massacred, children, women. Come on. I mean, if this is a transformation towards the better, they must be dreaming in color.
Yes. I'm thinking about the neighboring states. I guess there's two questions I want to make sure I ask. I want to, the Kurdish issue seems to be always in the middle of all these things. I noticed that the Globe featured a story about how the Kurdish area of Aleppo now is secured by armed Kurdish fighters. But meanwhile, nearby, we have this dramatic development where Mr. Öcalan, who is apparently, I mean, almost like a sainted figure amongst the Kurds, has called on his organization to disarm and become part of the Turkish government. And what is this configuration with the Kurds? We have Kurds in Iraq, Kurds in Syria, and then you have Kurds in Turkey. They seem to have, I guess, a common loyalty or respect for Öcalan. Can you explain what might be happening there?
Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, look, the poor man is incarcerated. He's in prison. God knows to what extent he has issued this freely and in real response to what he thinks. This could be basically arm twisting and, gun to the head, so to speak, measure. So it's very difficult in this time. Now, one would like to see that we have peace among all the groups, but it has to be honorable peace. It has to be a peace that's chosen, not one that is really brought at the end of the barrel of a gun. So to a great extent, I'm quite doubtful that the Kurds being free could have chosen this situation. And there is no question that if they were to lay arms, they would really be treated in any respectful and accommodating way. The whole history is history of violence, history of Turkey bombing them, aerial and on the ground, and organizing groups that are financed, trained, and paid by the Turks just for the sole purpose of undermining and domesticating the Kurds.
In terms of steps we could take, I'm not actually familiar with what the Canadian government is. Of course, we're in flux here. We don't know. But there are countries that are calling for at the Security Council. They are having meetings. But UN efforts, even when they provide peacekeepers and whatnot, tends to have unhappy results. What would you advocate that the Canadian government do, and what would you hope for in terms of international involvement with this ugly situation?
Well, the Canadian government is already involved, is on the wrong side of history and development. Omar al-Ghabra, who was a minister, who was a member of Parliament of the Liberal government, has been appointed by Trudeau to oversee the relationship. This guy is 100%, as most people would know, an Islamist, and has really been a supporter of this group. And Canada is taking a side here with the terrorists, so to speak, and has not really, except calling for a peaceful transition. But people have to be quite careful about making sure that this Syrian government is not rehabilitated, not integrated in the world political system, as long as it remains wedded to terrorists and to extreme politics of exclusion and destruction. Mm-hmm. And Canada can play a much better role by standing up to the transformation that's not inclusive, not free, not democratic, and not representative. Look, there is a guy who was an archbishop of the opposition, a very respected guy by the name Haytham al-Mannan. And he has taken very strong position against the trespasses and the mistakes and the abuse of their power of the previous Syrian government. Mm-hmm. He is now completely worried. He's writing saying, I don't see a difference between the old regime of Assad or the new regime of Soleimani. Both are undemocratic. Both are committing incredible crimes. Mm-hmm. Both have imprisoned thousands of people. This group has literally hundreds of thousands of people in their prisons. I mean, come on, you're talking about the prisons and the abuse of the Assad regime, and these people are exactly doing what the other regime did. To a great extent, the poor Syrian people are squished in many respects by the same violent and exclusive and despotic means of governance.
So the onus is on us if we actually said that we believe in that there has to be a representative government before there's recognition. That sounds like the road to go. Insist on it. Say you cannot be there. You're going to have to prove that you're going to share power.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only by statements, but on the ground. Let's see a new government where it brings all the parties, not a government de facto one, they have one single color, one single group. He brought all these people who were renegade in Idlib, now they're in Damascus. That's not what the Syrian people deserve. That's not what they really want. This is a golden opportunity, and if the real true democratic forces, progressive forces of the world are true to their position, they will not accept it. They need to see visible and overt and very well-seen transformation where all the people of Syria, regardless of their background, are integrated into this government. Look, Syria was one of the richest countries in terms of diversity and different groups. I cannot say that we have seen any representation or any position or any government person reflecting that diversity or expressing it or showing that Syria is making perceptible, observable, and overt way towards this reconciliation and that wide, you know, open inclusion.
Well, Professor Cabrosi, thank you very much for that summary. We're a very uninformed public here, and we're dangerous to the extent we don't understand. And we do appreciate it. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Phil, for at least shedding light on what's happening. We have to keep these people in the limelight so that they do not carry on their exclusive, violent, and non-democratic way. There is a fantastic chance that promising this, deliver.
Yes.
And we should count, you know, and hold them to deliver and not anything before they deliver.
Excellent point. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Professor Cabrosi. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM in Toronto. I think we have a little music, and we'll be back to talk to our other guests.